Chapter 2. Terra. The Outer Palaces. The suborbital took Venand, Rendenstein and Krul as far as a nondescript administratum region in the southeast sector of the Imperial Palace, half a hemisphere away from the centres of governance. Venand trusted Krul's judgment in his choice of the flight. If he believed none of Veritas's agents were aboard, his track record suggested he was correct. The transport had the advantage of taking her in the general direction of her destination. She didn't tell Krul where she wanted to go, though. She didn't trust him that far. The flight landed just as the moon appeared. The transport hub shook. Panic spread. Venand transmuted the shock of the event into determination instead of despair. She and her escort managed to descend from the hub into the warrens of the Underhive faster than the waves of terror. Deep below, where the Star Fortress could not be witnessed directly, the fear was attenuated. Once the tremor subsided, something like the desperation of normal life continued, though anxiety roiled the air. In the warrens of the Underhive, Venand wished for something more lethal than her las pistol. Rendenstein and Krul were weapons in themselves. Venand knew how to handle herself, but she was more dependent on the technology of death than the other two. After the assassination attempt against her on the Avenue of Martyrs, there had been no question of resupply. Anything taken from her quarters would put the lie to her apparent death. Rendenstein and Krul had moved the corpse of Emily, her body double, from her quarters to an alcove just off the avenue, not far from the site of the skirmish. The intent was to make it seem that she had managed to drag herself that far after the battle. None of the assassins had survived, and there had been enough disorder for bystander accounts to be contradictory. Veritas would have good reason to believe she was dead. Emily's subdermal microbeacon implants would fool bioscans whose readings would indicate Venan's DNA. Only the examination of a physical sample would reveal the deception. "Does Veritas use body doubles?" Rendenstein asked, the same thought occurring to her. "If he doesn't, he's a fool. He didn't strike me as one." No. Veritas would learn the truth, but not right away. And that was good enough. A temporary death and the time to make her move was all she asked. They stopped at an intersection of passages. They were in a zone where the functional abutted the decrepit. The walkway mechanisms still worked. Conveyors of horizontal, interlocking iron bands, they clanked, rattled, and screeched as they hurried serfs along the kilometers to their duties. The frescoes on the walls were black with grime. Above and below was more of a tangle of mechanized conduits. Tarps of varying size were suspended from the girders, forming patchy, ragged ceilings. They were rough sleeping areas, the closest thing more than a few of the serfs knew to a home, makeshift sleeping posts that were turning permanent for souls whose lives had become unending drudgery broken only by the briefest rest periods. At least, they still had an official, if tenuous, existence from the administratum's perspective. Not much further down in the Underhive was the realm of the Forgotten, where survival was so desperate a game that the line between human and animal had been erased. Venand planned a visit to those depths. If he were looking for her, Veritas would find her trail even more difficult to pick up down there.
"Which way?" Krul asked.
"South," Venand indicated the walkway.
"If you'll wait a moment, ma'am."
She nodded, and he disappeared into the shuffling crowd, scouting ahead.
"He must know you want to reach the Inquisitorial Fortress," Rendenstein said.
"Of course he does, but knowing that and seeing its location are not the same thing. What do you intend? We'll have to lose him at some point."
"Permanently?"
Venand shook her head. She wasn't interested in testing Rendenstein's killing prowess against Krul's. No matter the outcome, Veritas would be the only winner of that battle. Krul had cost her a valued operative, but he had also saved her life. Her allies were in short supply. Vangarich was one she could count on with more certainty than her fellow inquisitors, for the moment.
"If the opportunity arises to part with his company, we'll take it. And if that moment doesn't come,
We'll deal with that when and if we have to. She sighed, thinking of what she had seen in the sky. We're at a stage where having Krul in the heart of the fortress wouldn't be the worst of all scenarios. We have to reach it.
Shoring up her political strength against Veritas was no longer the most important consideration, nor was her survival. What mattered was the contingency that she could authorize. It was needed now. She cursed the High Lords for having let things reach this pass.
Krul returned after a few minutes.
Looks clear, he said.
They headed off down the walkway, moving as quickly as they could through the crowds, the floor carrying them on for several kilometres.
It would be useful to know the extent of Veritas's control, said Krul.
Venand had been thinking that through.
The attempt to kill me is actually a good sign.
You're still a threat, Rendenstein said.
Yes. If my influence had been neutralized, he wouldn't have bothered. I don't think Veritas likes needless internecine killing any more than I do.
Krul's grin was not a reassuring one.
So more attacks would be a good omen.
They would be delightful.
At the next intersection, Venand went right. An elevator platform large enough to hold 100 at once took them down. At the third level, they got off, and she chose another walkway, still heading south. The crowds were thinner here. This route served fewer active centres.
Krul offered to recon ahead again.
No point, Venand told him.
His earlier absence had given her the few minutes she'd wanted to speak alone with Rendenstein.
If there's an ambush, we're better off together.
The downside to taking the routes she knew was that they might also be familiar to other hostile elements of the Inquisition. She couldn't lose herself forever in the mazes of the outer reaches of the Imperial Palace, and she couldn't hand over her agency to Krul. She might well not reach the southern ice cap in time as it was. Her best hope was to catch another suborbital from a point where Veritas wasn't looking. Another few hours of travel, if all went well, would take her to the next flight hub. All did not go well. After 10 minutes, the walkway they were on ground to a halt. The serfs using it groaned, then carried on trudging. A few hundred metres on, at the next junction, there was another mechanical conveyor moving at an uneven, jerking pace in about the same direction.
That will do, Venand told the other two, and they took it.
The walkway passed almost immediately under a low, narrow arch.
Krul and Rendenstein had to duck. On the other side, they emerged in a long hall formed by rockcrete foundations on either side and coming to a rounded vault a dozen metres overhead.
There was a floor here, just below the level of the walkway. It was covered with the detritus of centuries, though at first glance, Venand thought she was looking at a disused cemetery. The space was filled with statuary. There were warriors and ecclesiarchs, Adeptus Astartes and High Lords of the past, and many imposing figures that likely had been intended to be the Emperor. None were complete. Many were unfinished, flawed material betraying the artists with splits and cracks. Others had been damaged beyond restoration. There was a vagueness to them all, whether their features had been destroyed or never set down. They were not gigantic. No single piece was so large that it could not have been transported by a group of unaided humans. Some of the chunks, though, were fragments of huge works. A finger, 2 meters tall, thrust from one heap, pointing at the walkway in accusation. A head as big as a man lay face down on the dark floor. Though the space had the shape of a building interior, it seemed to have come into being as a result of architectural happenstance, born of the juxtaposition of other structures. It had never had a purpose. It was a tunnel through which the walkway passed, and it had gradually accumulated the cast-off statuary. What must have begun as a random act had become a tradition, and then faded away. An air of abandonment hovered over the hall. The lumen strips were few and old, many were missing. The lighting was deep night, broken by weak pools of yellow.
We're alone, Krul said.
Venand could see no serfs on the metal path before them. She looked back. No one had followed them onto the walkway.
This is a disused conveyor, she realized. It doesn't go anywhere, still active.
Then why is it functional? Said Rendenstein.
It shouldn't be.
It's for our benefit, Krul said.
Of course, it would be nothing to stop a target's walkway.
then activate one that no one other than the target would choose to take.
They'd found her.
Krul jumped over the walkway's right-hand railing. Venan followed, with Rendenstein right behind. They landed between two piles of statues. Stern, unformed faces frowned, and heroic limbs reached for nothing. The floor crackled with shards of ceramic and marble.
"Keep going," said Krul.
Venan moved on through the mounds of broken art. She looked back after a few steps. Krul had vanished.
"There!"
Rendenstein pointed to a deeper patch of darkness in the wall. Another corridor. Venan nodded and hurried forward. She didn't worry about making noises. Her enemies knew she was here. Just as they'd reached the passage, she heard the crunch of footsteps behind them. Her anger at having fallen for the trap passed, replaced by cold venom. What she and Rendenstein moved through now was not a true corridor. It was a narrow gap between facades. The rockrete floor gave way to metal struts. Footing was treacherous. The light was even dimmer. The gaps between the struts grew wider. A slip meant a fall into blind depths. Venant advanced another few steps, then stopped. The next gap was too wide to jump. She turned to face her enemy, las pistol in hand. Rendenstein moved to the other side of the passage. She balanced on the rusted struts, ready to leap. In the gloom of the passage, the main hall looked brighter. Venan saw the attack coming. The assassins knew they had her cornered. They had no need for stealth now. There were five of them. They wore loose chameleon-line robes. They would have been almost impossible to spot in the shadows and abandoned art. As they closed in, their camouflage covered them in shifting patches of dark and grey. When they were a few metres from the entrance to the passage, a statue came to life behind them. Krul had been more still and hidden yet. The two rearmost assassins, a man and a woman, jerked to a stop. Their heads snapped back, mouths open wide for air they would never draw again. The other three hit the passage at a run. One turned as Krul drew his bloodied fists out of the upper spines of his victims. She laid down a suppressive burst of lasfire. The other two kept coming. One, she saw, was Outen van der Deckart. He fired his pistol, and an expanding cloud of silver-white burst from its muzzle. A web, the protein filaments expanding to fill the passageway. The tangling adhesive cloud slammed Rendenstein against the wall, covering her like a cocoon. Venand dropped low. The bottom edge of the cloud clipped her. She lost her footing and fell between the struts. She dropped into nothing, then jerked to a sudden halt as the webbing caught her left hand and welded it to the struts. The weight of her body pulled at the web, and the fibres began to cut through her flesh. She clung hard to the strut, trying to work with the web instead of against it. A constriction of pain and steel enveloped her arm. She still held her pistol. She fired upwards and hit the legs of van der Deckart's companion. The man pitched forward. He reached for a strut and missed. His scream as he fell went on for a long time. Van der Deckart leapt from footing to footing with a raptor's grace. He holstered his Weber and pulled out a short-bladed power sword. He danced out of the way of Venant's shots and raised the blade to bring it down on her head. Rendenstein tore through the web. Her body was a dense cross-hatching of lacerations. The web had sliced through her skin and subdermal armor, but her reinforced skeleton and musculature could punch through walls. Van der Deckart leapt out of the way of her lunge. She fell on all fours, limbs balancing on three different struts. Van der Deckart came back at her. Behind, the lasfire ceased with the snap of a neck. Van der Deckart swung his blade at Rendenstein's throat. She hunched lower, even as she yanked on the strut in her right hand. It shot out of the wall and flew upward. The makeshift javelin struck Van der Deckart through the chin and burst out the top of his skull. Rendenstein snatched the blade from his hand as the corpse toppled over and landed face down above Venant. Venant stared up at his features. Even in death, they were pursed. The meticulous discipline of his cropped beard and hair was spoiled by his flowing blood. Krul was with them now. He tossed van der Deckart's corpse into the depths, then held Venant's left arm while Rendenstein used the power sword to cut through the webbing and free her. They hauled her up and headed back towards the walkway.
"So much for the story of my death," Venan said.
"It stood up long enough for us to get this far," Rendenstein pointed out.
Krul asked, "Did you recognize any of the attackers?"
"Yes," said Venan.
"Alton van der Deckart, one of Veritas's political allies. He must have relished the chance to put me in my place once and for all."
"His presence might be another good sign," said Rendenstein.
Venan nodded.
"Veritas must have limited forces at his disposal."
Krul held up a hand, listening.
He lowered his voice and pointed back towards their point of entry into the hall.
"Not that limited. More coming."
Venan thought quickly. "Can you take them?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Then you have my thanks." To Rendenstein, she said, "Let's go. No more delays." They ran parallel to the walkway, weaving their way past the heaps of marble bodies. Half-finished expressions of faith reached for them with judging hands and blurred shouts. Gunfire erupted behind them.
"He'll catch up," Rendenstein said. "Maybe he'll take the hint, and maybe we'll outpace him yet."
They ran on through a forest of arms.